welcome to Democracy Support Dialogues, a podcast that explores the European Union's democracy support practices in its eastern and southern neighborhoods. From the best practices to the shortcomings of Europe's democracy support agenda in its neighborhoods, this 12-part podcast series walks through the policies of a variety of institutions and states to harness our collective democratic knowledge. My name is Fabian Schöpner, and for today's episode, I'll be speaking with Professor Elena Korostaleva about the Eastern Neighborhood. Professor Korostaleva is Professor of Politics and Global Sustainable Development and Director of the Institute of Global Sustainable Development at the University of Warwick. Elena is currently leading several projects, including the Warwick-Ukraine-Belarus Hub, a successor of the Oxford-Belarus Observatory, Resilience in War with Dr. Kudlenko, and AGMO with Professor Flockhart, looking at the challenges to ordering and global governance. Elena has recently completed a book titled Resilient Communities in Central Eurasia, which explores resilience as a concept and practice as part of democracy in the wider region. Now she's working on a monograph, Change, Complexity, and Resilience, with Oxford University Press. Within the Shaped MEU project, Professor Korostaleva is leading our efforts at exploring democratic practices in the Eastern Neighborhood. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Elena. Hi, Elena. Thanks so much for joining us, and welcome to Democracy Support Dialogues.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for this invitation.
Yes, of course. It's our pleasure to have you. Well, let's get right to what we invited you on to talk about. Within the Shaped MEU project, you're mostly looking at the EU's eastern neighborhood, that is to say Armenia, Georgia, and Ukraine most specifically, but also Azerbaijan, Belarus, and Moldova. What can you tell us about democratic politics in those countries? How can we understand democratic practices in the eastern neighborhood?
Well, thank you very much, Fabian, for asking this question. You know, asking this question of an academic is rather ungratifying because it can take hours before we come to answering this question, not even in full. But the question is important. And of course, looking at the Eastern neighborhood, as we can see, just like Southern neighborhood as well, it is very diverse and the countries are quite unique and different to each other. So in a way, the way I would approach this question, we look at these six countries, they're all very different, and yet they have a lot in common to a degree, and that's what I will try to very briefly cover today. So in terms of being different, clearly what we see, and I'll come back to the issue and the kind of the definition of democracy, we see, first of all, different histories. We also see different experiences of building democracy, looking back in the past, but also their exposure to engagement, for example, with the European Union as a very active actor in democracy promotion and all the other international actors as well. So all these differences are there. We also see major differences in traditions, in their visions of what, for example, people would like to achieve when they're building democracy, but also in terms of modus operandi. You know, some states and some countries present more active civil society. Others are more, I wouldn't call it subdued, but more restrained, perhaps. But it doesn't mean that they're not ready or undergoing some democratic changes there. So that's in terms of differences. But now coming to commonalities, I think what is important is to underline, I've said that the visions of democracy might be different, and yet, you see, that's why I think mentioning the definition of democracy is very important, because democracy, although while being kind of a form of governance, it is also about vision. So what people want to achieve. And that's what, for example, we work with in this project, but also other projects. We work with the idea of good life, what good life actually means for people. And once that kind of idea of good life is articulated in terms of norms, in terms of ideas, in terms of values and traditions, when it all aligns, that kind of creates that kind of ready-made package for people to align with, to move forward, and really to rally around the flag. So this vision actually is there in these countries. Not only have they learned from their experience where they would like to be as peoples, but also looking around them, looking, for example, how other countries put their affairs in order in terms of allowing for that people's voice. This kind of vision is already there. So that makes them well on the way or underway to building a democracy. But also what I think is quite crucial is this moment of self-organization, which is something else I work, for example, personally in my own research, and I would like to bring very much into this project. Because democracy, yet again, although we talk about a form of governance, first and foremost, if we speak about people's choices, it is very much about people's self-organization, how they bottom-up and horizontally participate, articulate, and materialize their visions in terms of building the country or life really worth living. So this self-organization, I think it is all there already, perhaps in different stages and different forms of speed and engagement, but it is all there. And actually, it has been very much paradoxically, though, demonstrated also by the instances of COVID, when, for example, governments were too slow to engage, to respond and to offer some form of support, security and engagement. It is very much came from bottom up, civil society came together, communities came together. They built on the available support infrastructures to move forward with offering some form of protection and response. And that kind of laid foundations, or maybe articulated those foundations that were already there in terms of then engaging then with the issues of democracy and politics related to democracy.
Right. And so self-organization of this kind requires a degree of public participation, and participation in structures, institutions, and processes, and a real stakeholderness, if you will, in these sorts of democratic practices. However, many of the countries in the Eastern neighborhood are experiencing a rather turbulent time, to put it lightly. Ukraine is currently entering the third year of Russia's full-scale invasion. Armenia just recently faced a very hot phase of its long-standing conflict with neighboring Azerbaijan. Georgia has seen nearly a third of its territory occupied by Russia since 2008. And regimes like those in Azerbaijan and Belarus have cracked down on any dissent and imposed draconian restrictions on society. How can democracy be practiced under such circumstances?
Thank you. And that's actually a very pertinent question. And yet again, once again, for us to be reminded that democracy is not at all just about theory or governance. Democracy is about practice. Precisely now, looking at the Eastern neighborhood, when we see so much turmoil, so much instability, crisis, war, conflict, we might even consider putting democracy on the back burner before coming to resolving the sexual issues in front of us. But what is paradoxical about democracy? Democracy is very much a living concept. It is doing, it is about practicing, it is about seeking really and building that life worth fighting for. And that's what very much is happening now in the neighborhood. Although we see all these measures, well, first of all, war, of course, in Ukraine, and of course, conflicts, for example, in Belarus, where correctly mentioned draconian measures have been introduced. There is no dissent allowed. Civil society literally has been pushed out from the country. A lot of people remain imprisoned and so on. But yet, paradoxically, despite all these measures, democracy cannot be stopped. Democracy is that amazing, intangible project that keeps going despite all these obstacles in the way. And that what makes it really both interesting to study, but also very difficult to study. But what we've learned about democracy, especially democracy as practice, and that's why we are now advancing this new conception of democracy, looking at democracy as a learning loop, and also democracy not as a kind of teleological concept whereby, you know, we move from A to B, and if we put specific institutions in place, we would should anticipate democracies happen, if not overnight, maybe through a certain period of time. Well, that's not at all the case. What we've learned is, as long as the vision is articulated, and we know that in all these countries, the vision of good life has been articulated, people want to have their voices heard, people want to participate and shape the life worth living for them. If not for them, then for their children and further generations. So we know this is in place. We also know that, in a way, those infrastructures, support infrastructures, are in place as well. Civil society is very, very active. Even in the case of Belarus, when civil society has been pushed out, civil society being in that open space now actually is still active, is learning a lot by engaging with international actors, by also learning from other practices abroad, and then sharing that experience with people on the ground. So all of that, all those infrastructures are still in place. And most importantly, this process, and democracy is precisely about process, builds relations. And these relations, I would argue, they're most important actually for democracy, the practice of democracy. Because once those relations are established, people lose fear, people begin to believe, people begin to fight and know that they're not alone in that fight. And they organize in that those perhaps visible or invisible organizations, networks that keep the idea of democracy and the practice of democracy going. So that's where I think contribution of this particular project is: democracy through practice cannot be stopped, even if all these draconian measures, government's crackdown, are taking place across Eastern neighborhood. A lot of the activities are hidden under the surface. And this actually tells us much more in terms of the narrative and the story of democracy, rather than ensuring that elections are happening. Well, they're happening, as we know, they just happened in Belarus. Nothing really will come out of it, of this institute of democracy. What is more important are the people. And people are clearly wanting democracy. They build relations and they engage in these relations in order to keep the momentum going.
I see what you're saying. What the EU has greatly emphasized in its past policies of the last 15 or so years in the Eastern neighborhood, and which your own research extensively explores, is this idea of supporting institutional resilience. But what I hear you talking about is the resilience of individual people and communities, the resilience of practices, that individuals and communities need to be and are resilient in their pursuit of a good life, as you call it. But to move on, at one point you had mentioned civil society learning from its interactions with international actors. And this is something we are really keen to tap into in our project. Not just neighborhood societies, civil societies learning, but us in Western Europe, Western European institutions, the EU, learning from neighborhood societies. What kinds of local democratic knowledge do you think Europe needs to learn from its Eastern neighbors and their communities of practice? You recently conducted a survey in some countries in the Eastern neighborhood and are expecting to do focus group discussions in the near future. What can we expect to learn from those?
Thank you. And that's actually a very, very important question and clearly drills into what we are trying to do as part of the Shape Dam project, and not just this project. So what I think is important and what we're learning from this project is that, first of all, democracy is clearly is about learning loop. And this learning loop begins, I keep saying that, begins with the vision, what people believe in, this idea of the good life. And the good life is not at all in terms of material terms. It's not about having all these material artifacts that would allow that good life to occur. Not at all. It is precisely about the ideational part of the good life that people come to associate with the idea of democracy, whereby they have a say, they have a voice. So with that, what we've learned is, especially from phase three of the project, we've done at the very beginning, because we know that there has been a lot of work done in terms of measuring democracy, promotion, support, practices in the neighborhood. So we've done a scoping exercise, we've done secondary data analysis to understand what people actually understand by democracy, what they would like to achieve, what pitfalls and benefits they've seen. So we've done that. Based on that, then we organized surveys in the three countries of focus, which included Ukraine, Moldova, and Georgia. But with that, what was interesting, what has transpired from all these surveys, is that, first of all, despite the conflict, despite the war, despite all sorts of measures and meddling of external actors like Russia, for example, into the affairs of these countries. Support for democracy in these difficult circumstances is much stronger than ever before. That's for sure. That's what our data actually showed quite clearly. Of course, there are problems. Of course, there are issues. But support is there, which means that people are committed and they will continue going, especially in terms of the practice of democracy. The second element, which was quite striking in our findings, is how much the element of the local is important for promoting and supporting democracy, which means that very much crucial engagement on the level of local communities, how they work, even in their local households, local councils, how they interact on the level of organizing their local governance. That is very, runs like a leitmotif across all our surveys there, because this would be then building foundations, really, then all these different layers of exercising democracy and democratic governments, taking it to the level, national level of the country, and then even thinking about global democracy promotion. So the local element literally was very, very crucial, and we would like to explore it further in our focus groups that we are now preparing for fieldwork in all six countries. And also, I think the third element that transpired from our online surveys is precisely that the EU, although the EU is very much appreciated as an actor in promoting democracy, there are a lot of issues as to how the EU does it. And I think there was a lot of emphasis in terms of not so much promoting a certain template of democracy in respondents' opinion, but rather than just simply supporting what people want to see as democracy. And this distinction about promotion and support is very important and crucial for our project. But how to ensure the EU can put it to practice and differentiate between this kind of premeditated solutions, and in fact, using very much a solutionist approach to building democracy, and how to ensure that there is support for local ideas. I think that there is a lot of learning we still need to do and see how we can actually explore this learning within the project, but then using that learning loop also translate and transmit it to our democratic agents, and the EU is part of it.
Well, I, for one, am really excited to see where this learning to support can take all of us. You and I have worked on lots of things over the last few years, and we haven't always agreed on everything. In fact, maybe we've even contested our own understandings. And that is something central to our work right now. Though we don't prescribe a template, as you call it, of democracy, we see contestation as an integral practice to it. What role does contestation play in the Eastern neighborhood? And maybe even contested understandings of what a good life ought to be.
That's another important concept that we are not just trying to theorize within the project, but also see how it actually really works in practice and why. And that's one of the most important whys we're really grappling with now. Why contestation is healthy and important, especially for the life of democracy. So going back to the very beginning, when we talk about different visions, different ideas of the good life, what is important is there is this scholar, Jenny Atkins, who 3 decades ago, she published a book about politics and the political. And her distinction and differentiation between the two concepts was that the political is precisely being about that kind of open space that allows for contestation of different ideas. And that open space, when all these different ideas are put on the table, they're debated, they're discussed, and then eventually, through contestation and that dialogue, emerges an authority that would lead through consensus then that one idea to which then every other party eventually agrees. We are in that open space at the moment with all these fledgling democracies emerging here and there. But people, in order to take up on that idea and follow that idea, they really need to debate it first. find that kind of common denominator and then move along. And that's why I think what we are doing now with the project, looking at all this at contestation, understanding that democracy is not static. Democracy very much is a living project. We do not need to agree at this point of time, but through interaction, developing relations, debating, we will come to some form of consensus. And through all this non-linear, relational, processual development of democracy, something beautiful will emerge in the end. But yet again, it's not ideological. We're not moving, you know, towards democracy or against democracy. We're just building that web of relations which are important for making people realize that democracy is very much living and has to be experienced first before, and never actually, and never be left as an achievement and put on the shelf, and then you can focus on something else. Democracy is very tangible, and yet it is also very intangible in that way. When we talk about advanced democracies, they're not simply advanced because they've achieved that status and they can live with it. Democracy is a road, very tough, difficult, challenging road. And once achieved, it doesn't mean that democracy will stay there forever. It's a project to be constantly cared for. It's the project that everyone has to engage with.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure engaging with you today on the subject of democracy in the Eastern neighborhood. Thanks so much for joining me, Elena.
Thank you very much for inviting. This has been a very fascinating discussion.
All right. In addition to brilliant academics, we've also got some civil society organizations in our project, and I'd like to invite one of them to a segment to wrap up today's episode called Civil Society Corner. Welcome to Democracy Support Dialogues, Christina Pitalskaya.
Hi, Fabian, and thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you here. Christina, tell us a little bit about yourself and the Civil Society Forum.
I work for the Eastern Partnership Civil Society Forum, one of the partners for the Shape Them EU project consortium. We are a civil society organization bringing together more than 1,200 civil society organizations from the EU's eastern neighborhood. We also have the EU member organizations, thus creating really interesting synergy between the neighborhood organizations and those in the EU. We are a regional civil society platform, as I already mentioned, really promoting European values and agenda in the Eastern Partnership. It's the joint initiative of the European Union. As a civil society forum, we bring together a community of practice and facilitate the exchange of know-how, regional projects and policy development, which lies at the core of our activities.
Yeah, I attended the annual assembly of the forum last year, and it was really great getting to meet and see the diversity of your members. So I just had this really interesting conversation with Professor Elena Korostaleva, and you've also had the pleasure of listening to it. So what can you tell us about civil society in the Eastern neighborhood? What is it and what role does it play there?
It's a very interesting question because we cannot really think of one or even two common denominators according to which we can group civil society organizations in the neighborhood, in the East or in the South. Civil society organizations, they differ. They are very diverse in terms of the setup, in terms of their activities and focus, but they're also flexible, which is a very important component of how civil societies function in the neighborhood. They adapt, but they also play a crucial role in really all processes that are ongoing now in the countries of the Eastern neighborhood. Civil societies play a critical role in the infrastructure in which the countries in the Eastern neighborhood develop. They have the knowledge, they have the institutional knowledge and experience in terms of responding to the needs of local societies in these countries. And I would say it's important to acknowledge the role that civil societies also play in building democracies as practice that Professor Korostaleva was also mentioning. Civil societies are part of this living organism that we call democracies in the region, And civil societies also change. This is what I also mean by saying that they are flexible. Civil societies currently play, especially in the wartime, during the conflicts, in the new context created by the new developments in the region, like enlargement, if you will, they play a critical role. And it's absolutely important to talk about and acknowledge the role, critical expertise that they bring to us when we analyze democracies in the neighborhood.
As you say, civil society plays a critical role in the neighborhood. The forum plays a critical role in our project, and you'll be joining me on future episodes for a critical role on this podcast. Thanks so much for joining us today, Christina.
Thank you so much, Fabian, for the opportunity.
Well, that's it for today's episode. Don't forget to rate and subscribe wherever you get your audio content. Join us next time as we speak with an expert on the Southern neighborhood. See you then.